It's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
We're going to jump right into the Furious Five. Tiger Woods made his return this week at the Hero Challenge. I mean, how great does it feel to have Tiger back in the game of golf?
Hero Challenge is pretty fitting considering
it is.
What did he shoot? A 65 yesterday? He's, I think, in ninth, tied for ninth place at the moment.
Yeah, he's like six shots behind the leader.
I mean, come on. That's just good for everything.
I mean, it's only been a 460-some-day layoff since he played competitive 466 golf.
466 days.
Yeah.
Hey, so. You know, give him some time.
No, I'd love to see it back, though.
Now, I mean, I know we were talking about this earlier, but do we think that he's going to be able to stick around? Because, you know, there's been some health issues in the past, and you've got your back issue that you've got to deal with, but he looks good. He really does. I've watched him the past couple of days. He looks healthy.
He does look good. His putting looks really sharp.
I'm telling you, it's the Scotty Cameron. That's what it is. He went back to it. He won 13 of his 14 majors with that putter. I don't know why he ever went away from it in the first place. You would have had to rip that thing out of my hands to get it away from me.
And that helps a lot. But at the same time, you were talking about if he's going to be able to last or if he's going to keep this up. I think we'll see him because we've seen him have these injuries, have surgery, and then come back and have to withdraw from multiple different tournaments.
But see, I always feel like he's come back too early.
Well, and do you feel like he's come back too early this time? I still believe he does.
I think if he had come back in September when he originally was going to, yes, that would have been too early. But I think he was smart about it. And he took his time. And I do think that he's going to, he'll play this tournament. He'll, say, hey, I felt great. And then maybe take a month or two off. And I really think that he wants to be back at full health for the Masters.
I think he does want to be back for the Masters. And so I think what this is this is him testing the water.
Yeah.
And I do not think for one bit that any of his competitiveness is gone. He's still tenacious and he's still going to cutthroat people on the course as much as he can. But I think in his age now, he's seen his body give up. And so he's adapting to how he can play well in his condition. So I wouldn't be surprised if after this tournament, he takes another month, takes maybe 2 months before another tournament, maybe plays one to two more. You said three before the Masters.
I think he's going to play three more before the Masters.
I think they're going to be spread out, though, because I think what he wants...
You've got one WGC before the Masters, which is World Golf Championships.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then you've got a couple... Then I think Tiger hosts a tournament that's before the Masters.
I wouldn't be surprised. Isn't the Travelers before the Masters?
The Travelers is, I think, the weekend before the Masters, or 2 weekends before.
I think he's going to take some time off, and then you'll see him play in the Travelers, take the week off, and then play in the Masters.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, moving on to Texas has fired Charlie Strong and hired former Houston head coach Tom Herman. Do we think that's a good move?
I think it's going to be a great move for Texas as long as recruiting is somewhere on that list as priorities. When Tyler Herman got hired, he actually hired six of his staff with him, which I think shows really great leadership. These guys were willing to move with their coach to a new place, and I think it's going to be an all-around great time for Texas. I say, what, Kyle, you said 2-3 years maybe?
2 years tops.
2 years tops.
If he's bringing six of his coaches with him.
The thing I like about that he's bringing his guys is he knows them. They know each other. They know how to work together. They're not going to have to build a relationship. The recruits know the coaching staff.
And this is huge.
That is the majority of the reason why a recruit comes to a school is because of the coaching
staff.
And
we were talking beforehand, just looking at what Tom Herman's done at Houston, 20-4 over the last only 2 years coaching. So you have to understand.
Now, we also have to understand that is in the American.
That is still college level, which means this coach came in and did that with people he didn't recruit.
Right.
Imagine what happens when he starts recruiting at a place like Texas, where Houston has the zones of those high schools have some of the best recruiting in Texas.
Right.
And then Austin is the other best zones for Texas football. So you have to go from really good recruits to really good recruits. And Houston has the pool, or Tom Herman has the pool to walk in the people at Houston or around Houston without poaching necessarily, but saying, look, I think you're talented enough to play at Texas at the high caliber rather than the American at Houston.
Well, see, for the past 2 years, Houston has been the high caliber compared to Texas.
Exactly.
Because
but
Texas has not been good.
I think that shows the legitimacy of how serious this is going to be for Tom Herman, because he is bringing that mentality that it's going to be, we're going to win. And he has such a close relationship with his players.
He does,
and,
yes.
And he develops them in such a way. I mean, Greg Ward Jr. was on Heisman watch for the first 4 or 5 games of the season before they lost to Navy. I mean, this was a team that if they ran the table and beat Louisville, which they did beat Louisville handily,
They wouldn't have been in the playoffs.
They wouldn't have been in the playoffs, but it would have made it really difficult, similar to a Washington story.
I think the way this season has turned out, if Houston had run the table completely, had not lost the game.
If they beat Louisville the way they beat them, possibly.
They'd be in the playoffs.
If they were undefeated, then yeah, that would have been a really, really interesting playoff run.
Although Navy beat the heck out of them, Navy's playing for the American title today. So
well, true,
we'll
but
see.
Again, you had those couple games.
Oh,
that,
I know.
Navy just decided they wanted to play well.
Navy's a good football team. Don't sleep on Navy.
Oh no, they have a great running game, and their coaching staff and the development that they've done over the last 2 years. I would not be surprised if next season it's something more along the lines of, okay, how high are they ranked rather than what bowl game are they going to get?
So the thing that was on the radar for a while was Herman going to, was going to LSU. LSU was kind of that school that was like, okay, they're going to get Tom Herman. Texas is going to have to figure out something to do with Charlie Strong because that whole situation was screwed up from the start. But then Texas pulls Herman, and LSU promotes Orgeron. So, I mean, what do you think about that with LSU? Because Orgeron's not exactly a big name head coach. He's had, I think, he coached at Arkansas, or a few years ago, Ole Miss. He was at Ole Miss, and so he didn't have great success there. Came to LSU. LSU hasn't had a ton of success.
Well, you have to remember in 2013, he also replaced Lane Kiffin after USC fired him and went 6-2 there as the interim head coach.
Okay.
Now this season, went 5-2 for Les Miles.
But he lost the important games. So he lost to Florida. He lost to Alabama. I mean,
but see, that's the problem with LSU football. And from somebody who's, you know, I lived in Louisiana for a while, and I came in, you saw me sporting the LSU Santa hat. For that culture, it's so different because I honestly would believe that Les Miles would have his job if he lost all of his games but beat Alabama every year. Like, they could go 1-11, and if they beat Alabama, I don't think he would have lost his job.
If they're losing all their games, they're not going to beat Alabama.
Well, I know. So. I'm just saying that their mentality is we have to beat Alabama because they hold grudges above all else.
Well, you have to beat Alabama to win a national championship because Alabama is always in the national championship
Absolutely,
hunt.
But I honestly don't even know if the national championships are on their radar. From the people,
just an SEC championship.
I get that, but the people that I know down there, they're so hell-bent on making sure that Nick Saban loses because he left LSU.
Yeah.
And they're bitter about it still to this day. And so until you get a coach in there that can beat Nick Saban...
He's the one that got away.
It's so true, though, because you hear them talk about the days of everything that happened. And then Les Miles goes... a phenomenal, you know, coach who wins 9-10 games a season, and they're like, oh, it's just Les Miles and he was working with everything that Nick Saban left him. What, how do you win 9-10 games for, you know, X amount of years and it's still Nick Saban's work? Like, I don't get it.
No, I don't get it either, but we're going to move on to Oregon firing Mark Helfrich, which I sort of saw coming because they had such a bad year, and Oregon has risen to the top of the college football world over the past, I'd say, 10 years or so.
Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly did that for them, yes. I will give him that credit. He needs to come back to Oregon because he is not having any, you know, success,
no success
in the
NFL.
I want to see him drop down to an offensive coordinator for an NFL team. I think if he dropped down to an offensive coordinator, it would give him a chance
I think Oregon's going to go hire him.
I don't think he wants to go back to college, though.
he got paid more, probably. Oregon probably paid him more than the 49ers.
Yeah,
probably. And yeah. And then he also got more equipment. Like, I'm sorry, but the NFL doesn't have the Nike deal that Oregon has.
That's very true.
So, I mean, it'd almost be a step up, and he'd win more games. So, but
maybe
with Oregon firing Helfrich, who do we think Oregon's going to go after? Is there anybody on their radar right now?
At this point, I've been looking. I don't really see anybody that sticks out on their radar for a head coach. There's a lot of feelers out there because there's so many coaches that are up in the market now.
But here's the thing. Oregon runs a specific style of offense. So there is a specific style of coach that they need because that is the type of players they have in that program. So they can't just go out and get anybody. Like, I don't think Nick Saban would be a great fit at Oregon.
No. But you have to look at it. Because of what Chip Kelly did at Oregon, they made Oregon a national...
They did.
You know, spotlight. Mark Helfrich took it away from that.
No, because he almost won a national championship with Marcus Mariota.
Which was whose quarterback?
Which was Chip Kelly's quarterback, okay. Yes.
And in that situation, it's hard to determine because what we see now is Mark Helfrich's recruiting. So that's where you see the decline coming in. You see the lack of development or the lack of keeping it stability and keeping it stable and how it wants to go. I mean, they went 2-7 in conference this year. I mean, that's really difficult, especially on, you know, a lot of struggling teams in that conference. I didn't see anybody, and I don't see anybody else picking up this job unless it's on a national level.
Don't sleep on Lane Kiffin.
I don't even know what that means because Lane Kiffin would be one of the dumbest human beings if he leaves Alabama.
Oh, what he has going on.
And here's the thing is if he thinks that he can start feeling around for head coaching jobs and Nick Saban will be like, no, we want him. He's so dumb because Nick Saban would be like, bye, Felicia. Like, and he wouldn't even think. And Lane Kiffin would be like, oh, I went for an interview. I'm thinking about it. And he'd come back Monday and be like, yeah, I didn't want the job. And they'd be like, oh, we already hired your replacement. You're gone, bro. Like, you're in. So I don't know. I don't think Lane Kiffin would be there.
No, he's not. I was joking. But
it'd be horrible.
I'm glad you ran with it, though, because that made for a really good little 30-second segment there.
Well, they did also talk about Greg Schiano going over there, which I think based on Ohio State's play, I think they would match up pretty well with Oregon's mindset, I would say. I wouldn't necessarily say their playing style or their, you know, the abilities, but I think if Greg Schiano went over there, that would be a big possibility to see national level, you know, return to
you
some sort of offense.
You also have Scott Frost, which is UCF's head coach, was under Helfrich at Oregon, took the winless team to a 6-6 season his first year. So there's also a possibility of maybe a higher back with Scott Frost.
There you go.
That is possible. All right, so we're going to switch gears here a little bit. And I know we don't do too many sad stories on here, but Joe McKnight, the former USC Trojan, was shot and killed on Thursday afternoon. And I believe it was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what it is with New Orleans and football players getting shot and killed there, but it's a really sad story. From what I've read, he was a really good, really good person, and everybody liked him. And just, you know, do y'all remember anything about watching him play at USC?
He was in that time frame right after the, you know, the
Reggie Bush era.
Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart. You know, you kind of missed out on a few of those areas because you did have Vince Young kind of taking over the collegiate football. It was just the spotlight. You know, and one of the things is there's an ongoing investigation on this, and these things have happened in New Orleans, and you know, our heart breaks, and of course our prayers go out with the family of what's going on in that, because how do you even process it in a situation like this? You know, he was 28 years old, and just to put it in perspective, that's 1 year older than me, thinking about this moment of like how and why do these type of things happen, and it's, you know, it's just a reminder. You know, life is short, so make sure that we're Why isn't what we do?
Just a quick rundown of McKnight's career real quick. He was the nation's top-ranked running back in 2007, coming out of John Curtis High School in New Orleans, committed to the University of Southern California, where he played for 3 years and rushed for 2,214 yards and 13 touchdowns before declaring for the draft his junior year. And in his 4 years in the NFL, McKnight had 113 carries for 505 yards, 23 receptions, and 241 yards and two touchdowns, along with 2,270 kickoff return yards and two touchdowns.
I mean, those are good stats.
They
for four
are.
4 years in the league.
Those are really good stats.
And he's played the past 2 years in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, so, which, I mean, can you imagine what, you know, Canada thinks about it right now, too?
Oh, I
mean, that's just depressing and difficult to deal with.
It really is. So it's never fun having to talk about stuff like that. But, you know, like you said, prayers go out with his family. I'm sure they're having a tough time dealing with this right now. But just everybody out there, keep their family in your prayers. And, you know, I'm sure it's a tough time for them. Anyways, moving on to probably the thing I have been looking forward to seeing for the past, you know, since the World Series ended, LeBron James in a Chicago Cubs uniform.
Full uniform.
Baseball pants and all. No cleats.
No cleats,
no stirrups. I was hoping he was going to wear some LeBron cleats in there.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been so great. Awesome. Yeah. LeBron debuts his baseball cleats.
Did y'all see my tweet with LeBron James for game 7? He is wearing an Indians jersey with King James on the back. I said this is their newest recruit to get him over the edge.
Oh, God.
He's going to win another championship for Cleveland.
He probably will. I could see it. I mean, he wants to play football for Ohio State now, so.
Yeah.
He would die. I don't know.
The guy's 6'10", like.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Think about the difference in speed. That would be awesome to see, but darn. I wouldn't want to see that talent just break it would.
If anybody doesn't know what the bet was, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade are lifetime friends. They both played on the Heat together. They made a bet on the World Series since D. Wade's with the Bulls in Chicago and LeBron's with the Cavs in Cleveland, and it was the Cubs and Indians in the World Series. So the bet was that the players' team that lost the World Series, for the next game that they came to the other city, they had to show up to the stadium in the opposing team's baseball uniform, whether it be the Cubs or the Indians. We all know that the Cubs won the series in 7, and LeBron did make good on his bet to D-Wade last night. And then D-Wade won the game, too. So D-Wade did.
You know, D-Wade ran the ship
last night.
James looked good, and he did score a team high of 27. But darn, the Bulls played really well together
they
with
did.
Jimmy
they
Butler, 26.
Really well.
You had Dwayne Wade with 24.
Last night.
Taj Gibson had 23. I mean, just what are you going to do? And this is the second game where I've seen the Cavs just not look like the Cavs, which some people say, uh-oh. And I say,